Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Brand new week on Monday, the 29th of September, 2025, on Connecticut Today. We chatted with State Senate Republican Leader Steve Harding of Brookfield regarding what's next for state power consumers regarding PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, after several major controversies surrounding that body. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum dropped by to explain the recent grand jury indictment of former FBI Director James Comey, and ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com columnist and blogger for Substack.com Terry Cowgill offered his thoughts on a plan to save the WNBA's Connecticut Sun using some state employee pension money. All right, PURA. The Public Utilities Regulatory Authority. By the way, our buddy, our pal Kevin Rennie, great column about PURA over the weekend of the Hartford Current. It's a mess. This whole thing now, like I say, with all due respect, I don't want people to get hurt, but just the imagery. It's a PURA right now is a five-car pileup on the Merritt Parkway. There are people exchanging papers, one side suing the other side, suing the other two. You hit me first. And it's a mess. And our utility regulatory atmosphere in the state is a joke. We don't have an extended plan as far as what we're doing for infrastructure or a grid or generation here in Connecticut. We just don't. We have the majority party in Hartford saying, hey, oh, we have such smart people here in Connecticut. We should be able to figure it out. And the Republicans say, well, yeah, how about you start doing that? Joining us right now, I'm sorry, this drives me nuts, Steve Harding, Republican State Senate Leader. Steve, how are you, man? How you doing?
Oh, it's good to be on with you, and you summed it up really well there. I mean, this is a total mess, and unfortunately, it's a Democrat-led majority in Hartford, but more importantly, it's the governor's office that has created this mess. You know, we passed the law back in 2019, so the governor has effectively had six years to appoint the allotted five individuals to PURA that the statute dictates. And because of his negligence on this issue and his inability to have a backbone, his inability to make decisions and make difficult decisions, particularly surrounding what has become probably the biggest issue that we face here in the state of Connecticut, that being electric rates that have exponentially risen to astronomical levels. Because of all that and the mismanagement and the negligence here, we're sitting in a position where effectively starting in a couple weeks, we're only going to have two PURA commissioners. So if you think about it for a second, there's supposed to be by law five.
Five, yes.
We only have now, because of the governor's mismanagement, we only now, starting in October, have two. And one of those two is actually on an expired term. And it just has not been reapproved by the legislature. So, and this, mind you, Paul, as you just mentioned, is the regulatory board that dictates what you consumer, you resident, you small business, dictates what you are going to be paying for your electric bill every month. I mean, just think about that for a second.
Steve,
mismanagement and negligence, that's at one of its worst levels I've seen in a long time.
On our news earlier today, Chris Williams had a soundbite of the governor, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not exactly what the governor said, but the gist of it was, and Steve, you may have seen or heard this in an interview, it's really hard to find people to do this job. Okay, I'm sure it's not an easy job, but Steve, like you said, with all these open seats, is it a case of him, do we think, we don't know what's going on in his head or in his office, is it a case of not being able to find people? Or, Steve, might it be, and this is just me talking, might it be a case of him looking for people that will satisfy some of the base in his party and not people screaming at him, oh, my God, Governor, you can't put him/her on the PURA board?
Unfortunately, I have no choice but to assume that it's the latter, because just to put it, on an understandable basis for everybody, most people don't think this because it is kind of until recently, PURA hasn't been a hot subject of conversation until the electric rates started going crazy. And then every average consumer started saying, wait a minute, who's approving this? And then they found out who it was. Now, with that said, just to reiterate, the governor has had 6 years to find five people. And mind you, this is a $200,000 a year full time job with health benefits and a pension.
200 large
a year.
I know.
Yeah, I know a lot of people throughout the state of Connecticut that are highly qualified, highly intelligent, highly skilled, well educated, driven for the right purposes, that would be more than happy to work for $200,000 a year with state health benefits and a pension. And so this is not exactly a part-time position or a volunteer. Mm-hmm. Then I could understand, okay, maybe you would have some difficulty. But even with that being said, you've now had 6 years to figure this out. And frankly, how could you look at your constituents as the governor and say that you care about electric rates when you can't even bother to find enough people to fill the PURA commission, which is the commission that dictates what rates are? And I also have to say, you know, precedent should dictate something here. Look exactly at what happened 6 or 7 months ago when the governor was pretty much openly using an appointment to this border commission to get Marissa Gillette's confirmation through. There was a sitting state senator that, according to the governor and by alleged reports, was offered a PURA commissioner job for his vote. And so you do start to question, is this more about leverage and the governor and the governor's office being able to utilize this $200,000 a year job in a politically favorable manner than it is about actually abiding by the law and ensuring that there's people there that are looking out for the ratepayers?
And yet, Steve, and the guest is Republican State Senate Leader Steve Harding, as somebody pointed out somewhere, I forgot where because I'm reading and soaking in as much of this as I can, it's like, well, wait a minute. Now, PURA, or the Massachusetts equivalent of PURA, they seem to have it somewhat figured out with Eversource. Isn't Eversource making this big, kind of a big dig up there in Massachusetts? They committed to this huge underground project. I mean, why, Steve, and this is kind of rhetorical, why do they get it and we don't? What am I missing here?
You know, I think, you know, PURA probably has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, here in Connecticut, you had both utilities suing PURA, and the chairwoman that recently resigned was a huge culprit in all of that. And look, I'm no fan of the utilities. I think the utilities could do a lot more and a lot better for the people of the state. But at the same time, if you're going to be in a position to work with the, unfortunately, we have a system in which these utility companies are part of a limited group of entities that could actually sell electricity to our homes here in Connecticut. It makes sense to have somebody as a PURA commissioner that obviously is there as a watchdog, certainly should be there fighting hard for the residents of this state, but at the same time can work with these entities to ensure that they provide a quality, affordable product to all of their consumers, as opposed to simply just litigating with them, which is going to waste more time, more money, and ultimately get no result for the people of this state. And it seems like, you know, the previous chairwoman that recently resigned cared more about her personal issues with certain people in these organizations as opposed to actually doing right by the consumers in the state, overseeing, regulating in a very effective way the utility companies, but at the same exact time, working with them when there could be an agreeable area to get good results for the people. And it doesn't seem like any of that was going on here.
And finally, Stephen, I know there'll be people pushing the other way, but look, I have nothing personally against Ms. Gillette. I've never even spoken with her. But having said that, Steve, and I know there are other sensibilities there, we need to get to the bottom of what happened with these text messages, the missing ones. Yeah. You know, my dog ate the homework here. Was there collusion on this op-ed? I just think for sanity, Steve, no matter what party it is, we need to get to the bottom of this. And I certainly hope, as I've said numerous times on this show, we cannot sweep that under the rug. I'm sorry about what happened, but we can't do that.
Yeah, Paul, you hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that Senator Fazio, who's an incredible ranking member for the Republican Party on the Energy Committee, him and I discussed this morning, and we were talking about potential candidates, just characteristics of who we'd want to see to fill these necessary vacancies. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we hit upon, based upon what happened with Chairwoman Gillette, transparency.
Yeah.
The people of this state, within their state government, particularly on a commission that is approving or disapproving rate increases on your electric bills, which have been skyrocketing here, at the very least, we need to have somebody on this commission that's answerable to the people of this state and will be transparent and open with the people of this state.
All right, Steve Harding. Steve, thank you. Be good, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, Steve.
Look forward to it. Thanks,
Paul. All right, thanks. There you go, folks. Steve Harding, Republican state Senate leader. Democrats are staying awfully quiet on this. I am sure about half of the country over the weekend saw the news of the indictment of the former FBI director, James Comey. About half the country said, oh, here it comes. Here comes Trump's retribution. It's the end of the world. And then about the other half of the country probably went, ha, ha, ha. Good. Let's see what happens. That's how polarized we are now. But from a legal point of view, what is exactly going on here? What is the role of the judge in this case? What's the role of the grand jury? Joining us right now to weed out all this, our buddy, our pal, Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News legal analyst, and check out his website. A lot to digest there. He's written many books, Thane Rosenbaum. .com. Thane, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
Always great hearing your voice, Paul, truly.
Thank you, Thane. I appreciate that coming from a guy like you. Okay, explain what's going on here, especially I think it may be lost a little on people, on folks, Thane, about the role of the grand jury here, at least on two of these three charges. So lay out what's going on here with James Comey.
So, you know, prosecutors bring cases before grand juries, and that's how they get indictments. It's oftentimes not that difficult. The prosecutor on his or her own is presenting the evidence to establish probable cause for the purposes of bringing the indictment. There are only two charges here. The entire indictment was only two pages. You would have thought something like this would be 50 pages, right? This is a former FBI director, mm-hmm. but it was pretty simple. There was a third charge that the jury did not agree with, that the grand jury did not reject it, but the two are making a false statement to Congress and obstruction of justice in connection with the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
So that's really where it is. People forget, you know, the Mueller investigation did not result in a showing of collusion, but people went to jail.
Yeah.
So then you have to ask yourself, well, why did they go to jail if they didn't have... That case was not a case that ended up being able to prosecute the president. The answer was these people went to jail for lying to federal officials mm-hmm. or lying on federal forms. And people don't realize that's a real charge. It's a real crime. So if you look at many of the people that went to jail, it was for perjury in this action. So in a way, it's sort of interesting that really what's this case about? It's about perjury, right? It's mm-hmm. about perhaps filing a false statement that doesn't seem like a big deal. What's the allegation? Well, you know, that Comey was actually leaking information or had linked information to the press. But when he was asked that question before the Senate Judiciary Committee, he said, I never did.
Mm.
And there seems to have been a conflict that someone else, McCabe, said that he did. And so that's that. And that's that charge. And, you know, the Mueller investigation, you know, was a mess. Because, you know, a lot of people were making representations like Adam Schiff that they had seen evidence of collusion. And what they didn't tell us is that the FBI hadn't conducted any of its own investigation. Mm. It had simply used the Steele dossier, which was opposition research paid for by the Clinton campaign, and that they went to the races with that. So, you know, that there's never been any resolution to that. And clearly Donald Trump, after two impeachments and six different cases of both civil and prosecutorial nature, is saying, you know what, it's my turn to go after my political enemies. The difference is, and it's a huge difference, Paul,
yeah.
which is that, you know, Donald Trump may actually be right that all those cases brought against him, it's no coincidence that if he decided he wasn't running for president, none of them would have been brought. It's possible, you know, that none of that would have happened if he had just played golf in Palm Beach and not said a word. But one thing is for sure, Joe Biden wasn't on television or on social media saying, I'm going after my political enemy, Donald Trump. This is a big difference. This we've really never seen before, where the president of the United States goes on social media ordering his attorney general, as if she's his private lawyer, to, you know, pay back his political enemies for the grief that they caused him. That's the problem, among other things, why the U.S. attorney who's brought this case is bringing it alone. None of the other prosecutors wanted to sign on. They all were two things. They did not see probable cause. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, they didn't like the look. The look was terrible that they were following the orders of a president who was trying to get back at his political enemies. It's okay if the Justice Department conducts investigations. Yeah. That's what they're supposed to do. But they're not supposed to do it at the behest of the president when he so publicly and openly is requesting for retribution.
Excellent, Thane. I knew I'd get a clear explanation from you. I can't wait for the next chapters of this. Folks, check out his website, ThaneRosenbaum.com. Books and all neat stuff there. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS. Thane, thanks, and we'll chat down the road. Appreciate it.
Certainly, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks. There you go. Terry Cowgill joins us from the Connecticut News Junkie. Read his stuff at ctnewsjunkie.com and substack.com, his blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I wonder whether or not Ned Lamont might want to invest some teachers' pension funds in the Boston Celtics in an attempt to try to get them to play 3 or 4 games in Hartford again.
Again, we remember those days. People, you know, Terry, you and I are about the same age. I tell people, do you realize the Celtics, the penultimate professional basketball franchise? I'm sorry, Lakers fans. It is the Celtics. What was it, like 4 or 5 games at one time a year, right? I went to a couple of them.
Yeah, it was 4 games a year. One of them was a preseason game, and the other 3 were regular season games. The only time I ever saw these great players play, I saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar play because the Lakers came to Hartford.
Yeah.
That might have been a preseason game. And then I saw Michael Jordan early in his career play with the Chicago Bulls. And I was amazed. He was not a big star at that point.
Yeah.
He hadn't yet, you know, blossomed and signed the big deal with Nike and everything else. But it was great. You could go and you wouldn't have to drive that far.
Yeah.
And you could go there and watch world-class basketball right there in the Civic Center.
Yeah. So now, Terry, you, as I have been following this, you wanted to discuss, I guess, now the national media has picked up on this. There's an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. And Terry, this is interesting because, and I talked to some union people, they didn't want to come on the show, but I talked to some people at AFSCME, and they said, no, we don't want our pension money, you know, invested in a professional basketball team. And I wonder, Terry, is Ned Lamont still trying to ease the black and blue, the Whalers leaving? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand it either. I think he just thought it might be a politically popular thing to do because, I mean, you know, lots of people want to keep that team here.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, though, it just looks like kind of a stunt in a way. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't serious, but, you know, every time the Wall Street Journal is kind of interesting. Every time a Democrat in Connecticut proposes a boneheaded idea, the Wall Street Journal editorial board will write a column on it, and you could set your clock by it.
Yeah,
they always do it, and they seem, you know, they relish it, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, they point out rightly that you know, Connecticut's pensions don't need to be saddled with anything risky because the fifth lowest funded after states like Mississippi. You don't want to be behind Mississippi in anything. Illinois, Illinois is just a basket case.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then they end, of course, by saying, by making the argument that really these state employees should move to 401k style accounts and not a defined benefit pension.
Yeah.
And you know, they use it as a springboard to make a larger point. But it's always bad news for Democrats whenever the Wall Street Journal editorial board publishes an editorial about Connecticut.
Absolutely. Terry Cowgill, the guest. And Terry, you have kind of a connection here. I didn't know this, to the Marine Corps base at Quantico, which I guess is going to be in the news because we're supposed to have, what, that big Trump White House meeting there with Pete Hegseth. And you've been there, you said, right?
I've been there a couple of times, yeah. It is a very large military base. It's not as large. It's not the largest Marine Corps base, oddly enough. I believe Camp Lejeune in North Carolina is larger. I've also been there because my son actually did some time at Camp Lejeune.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, they're going to have this. It's the most bizarre thing. It inviting hundreds of generals and Navy admirals there for this. We don't even know what the agenda is.
No,
we know that there's going to be. Then of course, Donald Trump didn't want anything to take place like that without him being there. So he kind of horned in on it. Now he's going to be there, I suppose they're going to have it. There's a couple of auditoriums, large auditoriums there at Quantico,
mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's where they're going to hold the meeting. But, you know, there's a lot more than just Marine Corps bases there. You know, that's where you go for Marine Corps basic training, where you go for officer candidate school. But on this base itself, the FBI training facility is there, and also the FBI crime lab.
Friend of mine was there. Yeah.
The DEA training facility is there. And, of course, the Marine Corps Central Command is there. And then you're going to have practically every general and admiral in our military right there on the base at the same time. It just seems like a huge security risk to me. And it just comes across like a stunt to me. But we'll have to see what the agenda was and why they couldn't do this via Zoom or I'm sure they have very secure facilities like this. And these generals could have done. How much is, you know, I would love to see some investigative reporting on how much is it all going to cost in the era of Doge and everything else.
So if you have any contacts, well, you got to get the news junkie to send you. Listen, you're an accredited, you're a credentialed journalist, so you think you could do a roadie there. And finally, Terry, in about the minute we have left, listen, they came back to make it close. The U.S. loses the Ryder Cup this past weekend, but I don't know. Is it wise to mix international golf, a bunch of drunken New Yorkers, and alcohol again to a large quantities ever again? I thought it was a little much.
I was embarrassed, frankly. But, you know, there is a larger issue about some sports insisting on silence because, you know, you and I have both seen this, right?
Yeah.
So you get like Jaylen Brown, and he's fouled, he goes to the line.
Yeah.
There's 1 second left in the game.
Yeah.
They're behind by 2 points.
Yeah.
He's got to make both of them.
Yeah.
And the fans behind him are screaming, behind the basketball board are screaming.
Yeah.
They're waving towels, they're doing everything. And yet, you know, in with tennis and golf,
quiet.
This is a very cerebral game. We require silence. So there's an irony there.
I think you should write a piece on that. Yeah, I mean, I never understood that. You know, I'm sure in the baseball playoffs in a couple of days, we'll see, you know, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, two strikes on the batter, bases loaded, a winning run on third, and a pitcher about to uncork a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Huh?
I don't think there's going to be any silence, Terry. I don't know about that. I'm betting no.
No, I don't think there won't be any silence at all, and but there'll be lots of celebration for the winning team, I'm sure.
All right, ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com. You get Terry's stuff there, and Substack.com. Great title for his blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, take care. We'll be in touch. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right, Paul, my pleasure.
All right, there you go.